Hey, this is B. Haywood, executive producer of Confirm Multimedia. And if you want extra content, you can go to buymeacoffee.com/confirm and get early access to all of our content.
You're listening to Confirm.
Big and Lazy.
This is the Big and Lazy podcast. This is Big, and we got a very special service for y'all. Early access.
Buymeacoffee.com/confirmed.
$5 will get you early access to the episode next day.
And $8 will get you exclusive content as well as early access to the episode. So if you don't want to miss any of the good stuff that we've got going on, then please subscribe to us at buymeacoffee.com/confirmed. Bye.
You're listening to Confirm.
This podcast was produced by B. Haywood for Confirm Podcast Network.
The Big and Lazy Podcast. I'm Big, B. Fine. And we got a legendary guest. Probably the most legendary guest we've had on this scout. John Wu. Welcome to the set. Yeah, I can't go. Take it easy on this Sunday afternoon. How about yourself?
I'm doing pretty good. I got a headache today, but I'm here for it.
Appreciate you stopping by. Headache and all. While we at it, subscribe to our YouTube, subscribe to our Apple Podcast, subscribe to our TikTok, Twitter, everything. Anywhere you can find podcasts, we are on there. We appreciate every follow, subscribe, support. But I'm going to ask you though, man, who would you like to see on here? But you got to be able to make it call and be able to start out like that.
I think a good adult person to see on here would be Russ Smith.
Oh, okay, Russ Smith.
Yeah,
okay,
yeah, he's interesting, man. He got a lot of stuff going on, but I think he'd be a great person to talk to.
Oh, okay, you gotta get him on here for us, Russ Smith.
Hit him up. Yeah,
appreciate that. He got his own liquor and stuff now too.
Yeah,
don't he
got his own bourbon. Uh-huh. He's doing everything. He's still hooping overseas, doing a lot of stuff, man. But it's always dope because he does a lot of stuff that involves Louisville that you may not know.
Really?
Yeah, so he's always into something, but he's a good dude, so.
Yeah, man, I ain't going to say he made me a Louisville basketball fan, but watching him out there, man, that was just, he's one of one, man. He's one of them guys,
yeah,
man.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's a hard worker, man.
Yeah, man. So what you been up to these days, man?
Man, staying busy. Just started this nonprofit that we about to get off the ground. It's called Made Culture, and it's a nonprofit that is about artist development, and it has a curriculum that students will follow and help them do all the things that I complain about.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? We're gonna walk them through it and help them like have a better shot at success doing this music thing. So. But, you know, the nonprofit is dope because that way we'll be able to kind of cover some of the fees that a lot of artists normally either don't know to cover or they can't afford. So that's kind of the latest thing that I've had my hands in. And I'm also got a doing the first Producer Corner Conference next month on the 29th, which is like it's a big free event where artists can come. And we're going to have a couple of panels and have a couple of stations set up where artists can go and get like. You know, somebody can look at their YouTube and tell them what's missing and, you know, do everything in real time so we can show you better than we could tell you. So.
Oh, okay. That's dope.
Yeah.
You said it's the first. Didn't you do it last year?
So I do Producer Corner all the time, but this is like the first Producer Corner conference where it's like, you know, it's free. Everybody comes. And like I said, we have panels. I'll bring a couple of people that, you know, we have a couple of discussions surrounding like the music scene and. Just stuff they need to know. And like I said, we're going to have stations set up to where artists can go, like, sign up for your publishing. If you ain't got publishing, we're going to explain what that is to you, mm-hmm. how to understand it, and then we're going to probably sponsor your $50 or $100 fee to sign up for it.
Okay.
To make sure you have it so you can collect your money if you ever put some music out.
So I'm going to ask you this. Like, what, not so much as new, I'm going to say not young, but new artists, like, what are some of the, like, big mistakes you see young artists make that you know
I mean almost all of them really the biggest mistake is that they doing music.
Yeah,
like
what do you mean?
Because it's like A lot of so the music business is one of the only businesses that you can get in and be a professional tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
With nobody, with no checks, nobody telling you no or nothing. Like I can't walk into a hospital and say I'm here to do brain surgery, can I?
No.
I'm gonna go to jail.
Right.
Uh-huh. They're gonna be like, he's crazy.
Right.
But in the music business, I can wake up tomorrow and be like, I'm the best artist there ever was tomorrow.
Oh, okay.
And there's nobody to be like, he's crazy. Uh-huh. Take him to jail. Like, there's nobody to do that. You feel me? So a lot of times artists get involved with music without even trying to learn to see what it takes to be successful. You know, they kind of disconnect from the fact that you're actually selling a product. This is a business.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so what you in it for? You know, if you in it to sell your product, you got to know how to sell it. And most of them don't do that. So therefore, we got a lot of artists running around being artists and have no clue how to get their music out properly. And they never make it nowhere. So 10 years down the line, you got these same people who could have went and did something else and had a fruitful life. Now they, you know, working at Taco Bell or something. I don't know.
Right. So like you saying, like, people forget to cheat the grind. Like you say, you got to go to school for 10 years to be a doctor.
Yeah.
You got to go to school 10 years to be a lawyer or whatsoever. You even got to go a 6-week class to drive trucks. But like you say, you can wake up, I'm going to be a famous rapper, and tomorrow you...
Yeah, you're a famous... In your head, you're a famous rapper tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
Because what you said was so dope to you.
Right.
And your verse, you know what I'm saying?
So like basically you're saying you need to tell your homies they can't rap, man. We need more plumbers in them.
Yeah.
Okay.
Facts, like, you know what I mean? But I ain't knocking nobody in our city or nothing. It's frustrating for me.
Uh-huh.
Because, you know, I fuck with everybody. I got love for everybody. I want to see everybody win. But when you see people who make the most ridiculous mistakes,
right,
it's you know, it's bothersome, you know. And some people think I shouldn't care, but I do, you know what I'm saying? I want to see people win. So, yeah, it's crazy, man.
So how did you get started? I'm going to, you know, backtrack a little bit. What got you started in the music game? And, like, can you tell about your beginnings, if you like?
Because I thought I was the best rapper in the world.
Yeah, okay. So you speaking from a place of endurance. Okay.
Yeah, so, you know, but it, you know, I did think that at one time, and I was nice. And then, you know, when I did music, I couldn't make, like, you know, today an artist could go download a beat tomorrow or right. today, if you know, find a beat and rap on the beat, right? You couldn't do that in my day. So you either had to rap on instrumentals or you had to find somebody who made beats, which was almost nobody. So I was like, I'm just going to try to make beats myself. And, you know, I took $500 my mama gave me, went and bought a drum machine, sat in my room for like a whole day, learned the drum machine, started making beats. And I started getting really good at that. And I kind of left the rap part alone. And I started making beats for everybody. And then, you know, I ended up living in New York for a number of years. When I came back here, I was kind of had a real hustling mentality because New York is super fast paced. It's like,
yeah.
And Kentucky was very slow. When I came back, I was in New York for roughly over about 4.5 years. When I came back, Kentucky was like super slow to me. And, you know, nobody was selling mixtapes. So I started hustling mixtapes at like Thornton's on 7th Street and or in like the Speedway and, you know, yeah, all the other places or whatever.
Like, what was on these mixtapes? Like,
it might have been like when Eminem was dissing Ja Rule. It was, you know what I mean? Stuff that people here didn't have.
Okay.
You might have read about it in the magazine because you got to remember back then, music information traveled through magazines.
It did.
Right? So you get that once a month. So you might not know something happened until weeks later or whatever. So, but I'm living in New York when Jay-Z and Nas was beefing. A lot of people didn't even really know, you know what I'm saying? So I was just doing stuff like that.
Okay.
And that's what kind of got me into... you know, I started producing again, became well known in Louisville as a big producer. And then that had my daughter slow down for a while. And then I got into management because I always stayed in tune with the business side of things.
Yes.
And so that's how I became like managing artists and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
So
do you still produce? Do you still?
I produce that all the time. Uh-huh. I tell people I don't, but I do.
Why are you telling me you don't?
Because I don't sell beats, but I got like 1,000 beats on my computer.
So why, okay, I ain't trying to get in your bin. Why don't you, like, say, like...
It's more of a therapy thing for me now. Uh-huh. You know, I just go to the studio and make beats all day.
Yeah.
And I'll make them. I'll mix them and all, and then I just turn the computer off.
Really?
Yeah.
So you wouldn't want the extra money? You know, like, a new artist is like a new headache? No.
So like the sound today really isn't the type of beats I make. You know mm-hmm. what I'm saying? I'm a boom bap kid. I'm a 90s kid. So yeah. It's like, I still make those kind of records. A lot of people here, unfortunately, that's not what they're into.
Yeah.
But for argument's sake, you right. I could be finding a way to monetize that, make some money off of it, whatever, but I just don't. It's a therapy thing for me. Go to the studio, make some beats, feels good. And then, you know.
Okay. So what artists are you imagining? Like, who are you got under you?
I mean, obviously Mars, right? Yeah. So uh-huh. Mars, I work with Mars heavily. I work with my girl Emma. She's really dope. A lot of people don't know who Emma is. Emma's from Louisville. I've been working with her since she was 16.
Mm-hmm.
She's got crazy voice. Like she's like a young Adele.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Crazy voice. And working with her, I work with the Young Prodigies, obviously. You know what I'm saying? I manage a lot of their socials and stuff like that. And they've been taking off with the Where's My Bus song.
Are you managed though?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. So how many of them is it? It was like 30.
It's a bunch of them. It's a program, a program called HHN2L, which is my boy T-Maid and his wife Nairi's nonprofit. And they take kids and they teach them policy and stuff like that through music. And they teach them how to make music. You know, we take them to the studio, make records. And we do everything right. Get stuff mixed and mastered, get cover art. We put it out. We promote it. You know, all of that stuff. Shoot content. So I help more on the social media side of things with them,
mm-hmm.
And they've been taking off a little bit. I also work with Tyrant.
Okay, shout out to Tyrant.
Yeah, shout out to Tyrant.
And Ice Spice is going crazy.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Uh-huh. Work work with Susie Tassiana. That's my dog. She hasn't put no music out, but you know, she's one of my favorite artists in Louisville. I mean, I work with numerous people, man, but. I work with Norman Sand. I'm not like his manager, but that's just someone I work with. And he's mm-hmm. if you don't know who he is, you gotta check him out. He's fire. But yeah, man, just work with a lot of people, man. So
this is the Big and Lazy Podcast. I'm Big. I'm B Fines, and we're excited to announce our collaboration with Flirt. Together, we are offering a brand new course specifically designed for musicians and artists just like you. This course is packed with viable insight, practical tips to help you grow and succeed in your creative endeavors. And I'm not going to lie to you, if you use our link to purchase this program, we get a little kickback. So I need you to go check, and the link's going to be in the description, in the comments. Go check that out. Fleur, Big and Lazy, together, putting Louisville on the map. Is there anybody you can say in the city that you want to work with and haven't worked with yet?
Nah. I'm kind of, you know, I'm slowly becoming like a villain.
Mm-hmm.
I'm slowly becoming like the person who hates everybody.
The grumpy old man, per se?
Yeah, it's kicking in, for real.
Uh-huh.
You know what I'm saying? Because a lot of people just don't listen. You know, they don't listen. And it's like, I'm not here to toot my horn or nothing, but I do have a lot of the answers. It's like, right. if you was just, you know, so it just, you get burnt out on it. You know what I mean? So I just try to work with people I started to understand why labels only work with artists who got motion.
Yeah.
Right. Cause it's easier to go to somebody who's got motion and say, yo, I think you should do it. Makes sense. Cause they probably already have some experience in what you're saying. And you know, if you're able to bring some resource to the table they ain't got, they might want to take advantage of it and use it. But for artists that's up and coming who don't have that, it's a uphill battle sometimes because they don't get it. They're very new.
Are you familiar with a Pound for Pound Records? It was a record label in Louisville about 20 years ago. Wet. Oh, he was the...
Wet.
He's a barber now in dreads. But that's one of his things. He said he had a couple artists. He said, I can't push the drive. I can put money behind you, but mm-hmm. I can't. You got to want it more than me. You know what I mean? So I get what you're saying there. Like, Like, hey, grind. You can't cheat the grind. Consistency is the key. Like, even with this podcast, like, some days I don't want to record. It's a nice sunny day. I could be riding my old school. You know, my bitch. You know what I mean?
Y'all been staying really consistent. Like, you know what I'm saying? So, like, so I think that's kind of what it is. Like, I might see y'all. I might have some game to offer even to y'all. But like, yo, y'all should try this and do this. And I'll do that. You know what I'm saying? But it has to be somebody who's kind of moving and doing things. Because I've worked with a lot of the artists that I discover. And they don't got nobody helping them. And I try to help them, but then it's like, you know, like it gets nowhere because it's like they just don't take heed to what you're trying to tell them to do.
Right.
You know, and that, yeah, so it ain't really nobody in Louisville that I per se want to work with. I want to work with anybody who wants to work, but I'm not like, man, I want to, everybody that I've always wanted to work with, I'm working with.
Okay. I hear that. And that's what I told my homie. We were just talking the other day. I saved my advice. He's like, people don't listen. You could tell somebody, I need your advice. You could tell them, don't do this, don't do this. And I'd be damned if they don't go, you know what I mean?
Yeah, 100%. Yeah.
That's wild. So, the New York, you described, like, what's the main difference between the, you say New York is faster, where in Louisville slower. Like, what do you want to go in a little bit about that?
Like, in New York, all right, so, like, if you want to be an artist, right? So, there's a lot of things that go in New York for you where you can participate as an artist. If you're not out hitting these places and meeting these people, like you're not gonna make it because it's competition everywhere. Mm-hmm. Up in New York, the competition is because it's so dense and so more of a population. Everybody's trying to do what you're trying to do. Everybody's going after the same position as you. So if you ain't a hustler and you ain't out front, you're not gonna get seen. You know what I mean? But when here. Like, that's what frustrates me the most is, like, I could take an artist. If an artist would just listen, I could take an artist and give them they could have a big reputation here. Mm-hmm. Because some of the things that we would have them do is some of the things that people would be impressed by here. But not necessarily, like, in New York, it's a different game. Yeah. You feel me? It takes lesser work here to become popular than it does in a lot of other places.
Right.
So, so New York is, like, different for that. It's like you got to really hustle. You got to really get out in front because everybody is competing. It's not like here, you know, down here people are competing with each other, but not like in a New York or something like that. Mm-hmm. Like if you want to be a DJ, think about how many DJs there are in New York.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Anything you want to do, think about how many people up there don't want to do the same thing. Mm-hmm. So you got to really be great or you got to be out there out in front. So that's the biggest difference to me. And they got more resources, obviously, because they got labels and they got offices up there. They got executives up there. So
right,
yeah.
So you said I'm gonna go back into your producing. Like, what were some of your influences like when you first started out? Like, what were some of your influences and like your motivation to when you first started producing?
My biggest influence was probably RZA from Wu-Tang.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because clearly that's where I get my name from, if nobody knows.
Yeah.
That's where I got my name from, Wu-Tang. That's why everybody calls me Wu, because I was like the only kid bumping Wu-Tang in my city.
Really?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I had a couple other homies, but for the most part, they used to call me Wu-John. They'd be like, here come Wu-John with his Wu-Tang.
Yeah.
All right. So RZA was a huge influence. But you know, like people like RZA, Pete Rock, DJ Premier, your Kanye's, your Just Blazes, all of those guys are like huge influences for me.
Mm-hmm.
So, I'm a sample kid. I love sampling.
Yeah.
So, it was always dope how they would flip samples to me.
Like, what's some of the craziest samples you like? You didn't.
I don't know the name of the song, but I flipped the Pink Floyd sample one time. That was crazy. Stevie Nicks, which is a white rock lady. I flipped one of her samples, which was crazy. A lot of Bob James, but he's heavily sampled, but Bob James got crazy samples. Do you know 93 Till Infinity by Souls of Mischief?
Mm-mm.
All right, well, you got, yeah, you young boy, young guy. Well, you got to check that out.
I ain't that young.
But that's one of the like most legendary sample flips of all time. But you know, I would say my top favorite samples out there is like that Stevie Nicks sample.
Because I've been following this Instagram page. I give it to you when I can't think about him, but I'm surprised. Like he's digging deep from samples. Like he's just uncovering. Like you know, he'll take the original song. He'll take and Like, you know, it's crazy. Like, and some of these samples are layered. Like, it's two or three samples.
Yeah, my favorite producer is Alchemist.
Yeah, I fuck with Alchemist.
Alchemist does, he finds some crazy obscure shit all the time. So that's my favorite producer right now. But yeah, his sample flipping is crazy. J Dilla was, I was a huge J Dilla fan.
Yeah.
You know, Q-Tip from Tribe Called Quest. He's a dope producer too.
Okay, yeah.
So,
what was that? Midnight Marauders. I like that album. I was going through a phase when I first got my car. Like, I was going, you know, I googled like the top 30 or top 50 albums all the time, and I go home and don't judge me. I'll burn them, bitch. You know what I mean?
Yeah. What? I was notorious. That's what I was doing. I was burning them CDs. Like. Yeah. When I learned that you could, I remember learning when I understood that you could burn CDs at the crib.
Yeah.
I was like, what?
Yeah, it's crazy, man.
And then I knew you could go buy blank CDs, and then I figured out you could buy a CD stamper to make your own labels.
Yeah.
Bro, I thought I was a record label. I thought I was like a CD duplication. One tower, just burning one CD at a time, 4 minutes every time, sitting there for hours, like. Then I just hit the streets and I come to Louisville. Man, I got this, you know.
Yeah.
And I would just hustle them CDs for $5.
That's a good, man. I was my hustling back in high school. Like, they'd draw a little list up, you know, 10, 15 songs, man. You know, I had the two for five, $3. Yeah. It was something crazy.
The
man.
Dope thing for New York, though, was because you would have, those DJs would have, like, remixes that you can't hear.
Yeah.
Unless you're in New York. Mm-hmm. So when I would get them, people down here wouldn't believe that I had what I had until I played it.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So that used to help me out a lot. Because I don't know if you ever remember when Busta Rhymes dissed Ja Rule. Do you remember that?
I don't remember Busta dissing Ja Rule.
Yeah, he had a whole very diss. So when, do you remember when 50 did that Hail Mary? He did the diss, he dissed Ja Rule on Tupac's Hail Mary.
Yeah, yeah, uh-huh.
So Busta got a verse on there.
Uh-huh.
And so nobody believed me that was a thing here.
I still ain't heard it.
Yeah, and I used to sell this. They'd be like, man, you lying. I'm like, and I play. They'd be like, give me that.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, that used to work out all the time for me.
So I'm going to ask you this. Like, we got the South, North, Midwest, and West Coast. What region would you say was the most influence on the rap?
Influential or most? Influential. I mean, New York. Because that's where it all started from.
Uh-huh.
If you're thinking about it on that level, yeah, I think... Yeah, New York's kind of started it, everything. And I think every other region, when they got a whiff of hip-hop, they wanted to do it too.
Mm-hmm. I think New York started it, but the South just took it to somewhere.
No, the South, okay, you mean like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would agree that the South took it and never let it go, and it's evolved into this whole other thing.
Yeah.
But I also would attribute that to technology too. So when the South got it, technology was starting to change. And you know what I'm saying? Because remember, it used to be a regional thing because, again, the way information traveled. You know what I'm saying? So when the South got it, social media started becoming a thing. You know what I'm saying? And so I think that it's evolved like worldwide, but I think the last group of people to have a hold on it was the South.
Yeah.
Yeah, because when, what's that song, I Don't Give a Damn? By Youngbloods.
Youngbloods, yeah.
When that came out, I remember knowing distinctively that everything had changed because I remember they was playing that in New York.
Really?
And I was like, they've never played a down south rapper in New York before except for that song.
Uh-huh.
And that's when I knew something was changing.
Ah, okay.
Yeah.
So that was like the first that they made the... Okay.
Yeah.
So let me ask you this. You say you paid... $500 for your first. You still got that beat maker still.
You know it's fun. Nah. My man does though. My man Devo. Shout out my brother Devo. He got it. He still has it. Yeah. He'll pull it out every now and then. I play with it.
Okay.
Yeah.
So could, like, if somebody walking somebody through making a beat, like, describe it as like as simple as you can. Walking through like if simple as you can to describe how you make a beat, like from.
You just layer sounds. So depending on where you want to start, you might start with a melody or you might want to start with the drums, but you just layer the sounds. So you might, like with me, I usually start with the drums first, and then I'll find a melody to kind of fit whatever mood I'm in. And then, you know, with every song, you got to have a bass line. You know, then you got to have a sound that makes it the hook. you know, this part is going to be for the hook. So it's pretty much that simple. When I had that drum machine, it only had four tracks that I could use. Mm-hmm. So it was a drum track and then three sounds. So it was always making the drums, making the melody, adding a bass line, and then adding a sound for the hook.
Okay.
Yeah, you just layer them, set them on top of each other, make them make sense.
Mm-hmm. So tell me about that time, like, that you bumped into an artist and you was, like, starstruck. You was like, you know, like, damn, like, I'm in the same room. I'm in the, you know.
I got a couple of them stories.
Go ahead. The Big and Lazy podcast.
So, all right, so I remember when, so a lot of people, I don't know, you know, I produced for Ghostface before from Wu-Tang. Mm-hmm. I'm a huge Wu-Tang fan. So they came to Louisville a couple of times, and I've seen them every time they came. But the first time I met them backstage at the show, and it was cool because I got to be on stage with them and all that. So that was kind of surreal for me. But the one person that I wanted to meet wasn't there, which was RZA. And, you know, years later, they came back. And me and two of my homies was like, man, let's go to the hotel. I know they knew where they were staying. Go to the hotel. They was at 21C, and they was at the top floor. We get up to the top floor, and all the doors have do not disturb signs on them, right? Yeah. So we're like, damn, all right, we're not going to see him. Because this time RZA was here. Uh-huh. So we go downstairs, and we leaving. And as soon as I walk out the door, I look in the window, I see you, God. And I was like, I'm at least going to say what up to you guys. And my boy was like, man, nah, he's an asshole. I go and I see him in the lobby, and I start talking to him, and he's just staring at me. Like, just, I know in my head, I immediately know that something's not going right, because he's just looking at me crazy.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to, like, talk to him, and then out of nowhere, he was like, I don't talk to nobody when I'm eating. And he just turned around and walked away. So I'm just standing in the lobby doing one of those kind of, like, you know, like looking around, seeing, yeah, like, yeah, nobody's seen that, right?
Right.
And then Master Killer from Wu-Tang comes out the bar. My boy sees him, starts talking to him. He introduces me to him. Then my other homie who was there, he was drunk. He was like, man, let's just go upstairs one more time. I was like, fuck it, like, let's go. We get up, we go back upstairs. We on the top floor. This time we hear somebody getting busy. And now we turn into, like, little perverts. You know what, yeah, I'm saying? Now we being funny, like, man, who's in here? And I step next to a door. Right. And I'm creeping, like, I'm like creep, like, you know, and the door just pops open, and RZA just takes one step out of the door, and he freezes, and he looks at all of us, and I'm looking at him, and he's like this close.
Yeah.
And I'm just looking at him. I'm like, oh, like, I had so many thoughts in my head.
Yeah.
Cause I was like, oh shit, that's RZA. Uh-huh. And I was like, oh, this looks bad. I was like, I'm about to ruin every chance I got to even meet this dude.
Right.
And he goes, what are y'all doing? And he started laughing, right? And I'm going to just show you how the universe works, or how God works. He starts laughing, and him and his wife walks out, and he walks right up to me, and he pats me on the shoulder. He goes, man, it's good to see you again, man. He's like, come on, let's go downstairs and get some of that Kentucky bourbon. And in my head, I'm like, bro, I've never met you before.
Right.
But I was like, okay.
Yeah, uh-huh. Yeah.
Like, yeah, good to see you again, too. Let's, you know.
Uh-huh.
And we went down there and kicked it with him for like an hour and a half, drinking, getting drunk, yeah, with him and his wife.
Oh, that's dope.
Yeah, that was crazy.
Uh-huh.
And then meeting Erykah Badu was wild, because that was like becoming friends with her. It's still crazy to me to this day, like, just saying, like, I can call and we can talk about whatever. You know what I'm saying? Well, me and her, we play anagrams on the iPhone. It's crazy.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? But me and her was,
you say anagram, what's that?
The little word game where,
oh,
it's
okay,
like,
yeah.
But me and her was, I was starstruck on with her, because she's Erykah Badu, of course, and she's so down to earth. But those, I would say those are probably the two biggest ones. I've seen Nas before in real life, like about 30 feet in front of me. It blew my mind.
Oh, really? Yeah. I'm a big Nas fan, man. That's crazy.
I went to the first hip hop summit in Queens,
uh-huh,
and he was there with Russell Simmons. And when he walked in, I was sitting in the front row.
Yeah.
I was like, damn, Russ really Nas.
Yeah, I went to go see him up in Columbus. He had I'm going to say waterfront, like an open park.
Yeah.
He came with an orchestra, and, like, that was the dopest shit.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Like, Nas is the man. That's my favorite artist.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, of all time.
You,
yeah,
ever work with him?
I would, of course. Uh-huh. I haven't, but yeah, I would. Yeah.
How do you feel, like, do you, his last, you know, with King's Disease and that, mm-hmm, Magic, Hit Boy, how much do you credit him, his recent, I ain't gonna say Nas' success, but how do you Because that was one of Nas' hitbacks on his career that he, you know, his beat selection. But yeah. since he been working with Hit-Boy, it's been
Yeah, I think it was dope. I was going to say that, too, about, you know, yeah, he notoriously has a reputation for picking bad beats.
I agree.
Which he did. I agree. Yeah. He did. You know, I can admit that. But I think these last few projects was like a makeup for all that. Like, I feel better.
I think so too. Like, that's a hell of a run. 6 albums. Like,
yeah,
man. Nas to go and like it just goes to show, real music, real rap don't never. It don't never expire, man. You know.
Nah, it don't. Uh-huh. I think. You know, good music always inspires the next generation, and I think he's one of those ones that continue to inspire every generation. You know, he's one of those few groups.
What was your favorite album of his?
It Was Written.
That's dope. Yeah. I'm going to go with Godson, man.
It Was Written kind of changed my life. So, like, that was the record that, you know, like, it changed my life because it was, first it was Illmatic. I heard Illmatic. Funny story was I used to hang out with these kids and we used to steal. We was like a big stealing crew. Mm-hmm. And so I remember stealing. I was notorious for stealing tapes.
Yeah.
I would steal any tape you want. You put in an order, I got you. I'm going to get it.
Yeah.
And so I remember stealing the Nas. I used to go steal just random tapes because I didn't know who they were.
Yeah.
I was like, I'm just going to take all of them. And I remember stealing the Nas song. It was a song called Halftime. And I remember getting my boy's car and we listened to it. The song was so dope that it blew my mind to the point I felt bad for stealing the tape. I was like, no, I got to go support this guy. Like, yeah. So I remember going back and buying a copy, right? But so that was Illmatic, and I became a fan from that. And then he dropped It Was Written. It Was Written came with an insert that you could open up and had all the words. And I remember the first song on the tape called The Message. One of the last lines he says is, love changes, thug changes, best friends become strangers.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like, that was a huge gem to me.
Yeah.
Because at the time, you know, I'm hanging out with certain people. I'm like wilding, just doing whatever. And it made me sit down and go, damn, wait a minute. So what you're really trying to say is like, the way I took it was like, you might want to stop doing stupid shit for some people because these might not even be your homies. In the next whatever, you know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
And then I remember listening to the whole album and I would read all the words and it was like I was in class. That's what it felt like. And it made me want to be smart because I was like, this dude is extremely intelligent.
He is, man. Yeah. He said he used to go read dictionaries, man. He used to read. That's crazy, man.
So it made me want to be intelligent. And that's mm-hmm. kind of like was a shift for me because I wanted to be smart. I didn't want to just wild out.
Looking back on it, them friends, are you still hanging with those friends?
During that time, a lot of those friends, like, nah, I don't. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't even know none of them no more.
Ah, okay.
You know what I'm saying? So, yeah. You know, but when I listen to Wu-Tang, I grew up with these dudes from Chicago, and those are like my brothers to this day. Yeah. You know what I mean? But other than that, nah, I don't.
You said you grew up in Chicago?
Nah, my boys that I grew up with, mm-hmm. they are from Chicago.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's a huge family from Chicago, they kind of raised me because I'm an only child.
Mm-hmm.
So when I started hanging with them, my best friend is one of their brothers, and I didn't know that he had 6 brothers and 7 sisters, all from Chicago. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? And then by me being around, I'm starting to see all these people. I'm like, God damn, like you got a huge family.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, they was like gangsters, though. You know what I'm saying? Me and him was the only squares, for real. We was the only ones that wanted to play basketball and holler at chicks.
Yeah.
Everybody else was like getting to it. You know what I'm saying?
Huh?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
All day. But then on the flip side of things, I was very well protected, too.
Yeah.
Because, like, nobody gave me no problems. Because they was like, nah, he run with a crazy crew.
Really?
Like, leave him alone.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
That's what's up, man. So let me ask you this. This is the Big and Lazy Podcast. Give us something big, something good to eat, and Lazy, something good to watch.
All right. I know, and I remember you asking this question. I remember last time you asked, I was like, damn, I'm going to have to answer that one day.
Uh-huh.
Let me see. Man, I would say, go get you some, that's a good question, bro. That's a good
do,
question.
Do, 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 do.
I'm a big, all right, I'll say this. Go get you something simple, but get you some spaghetti from Barvetti.
Uh-huh.
Barvetti is an ill pasta joint in Louisville. They make a lot of their stuff in-house. Okay. But it's one of my favorite restaurants, so shout out to Barve. Go get you a big plate of that and then go home and watch like The Boys or something.
What? You talking on Amazon Prime?
Yeah.
For the last three episodes, I didn't big that show up. That show was wild. I'm on first season. Like, these niggas, they're killing me. They
Well, I like it because if I was a Superman, let's be real, I'm probably going to be tearing shit up. Like, you know, because I can, right?
Right. So, who's going to stop you?
Yeah, like, who's going to stop? That's why I like about it.
I love that show. Like you said, like, it shows the human aspect because think about it. If somebody has Superman powers, you know, say it's 10 superheroes. A good three of them people is going to abuse them powers. Like, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah, of course. Yeah, they're going to abuse that shit, man.
Right, like, it's just human nature.
So, but I think that would be a good combo. A big thing of spaghetti and watching The Boys.
You say Bar Vetti? Where is that?
Yeah, Bar Vetti. It's on a market right next to, you know, the Cuban spot, the Yellow House. And then there's the hotel.
Yeah.
On market. And right next to the hotel is Bar Vetti.
Okay. Is that a Nulu?
Yep, Nulu. Yep.
Okay.
That shit is good, man. I love it. I go there all the time. So.
I'm about to try it out. I've been looking to try new pastas. It's a black owned pasta restaurant. I've been fucking with them. Like, I can't think of the name of it, but.
Here in Louisville?
Yeah, it's a black owned. I can't think of it. I gotta look it up on
my door. You gotta let me know that too, because I love pasta. It's one of my favorite dishes. And I didn't know because I used to eat. I didn't know that. I mean, it's going to sound stupid, man, but I didn't know for a long time that pasta was only three ingredients until, like, I got into, like, eating unprocessed food. Yeah. And then I learned that. I was like, what? And then I started finding, like, organic pasta, and it tastes different than what you buy out of, like, Kroger's or Walmart.
Really?
Yeah.
So you said you don't eat no processed food?
I mean, I do, but I'm like, I'm very conscious of eating, you know, organic foods, too.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I do that a lot.
That's crazy. We got to pay extra for organic apple. You know what I mean? If this is organic, what the fuck are we eating, man? Like, I don't.
Food is tricky, man. Like, I think you got to pay attention to it because, you know, I'm pretty old. Well, I'm not old, but I'm older than a lot of people. And when you get to my age, it's like you do start thinking about that.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, when you 16, you live in life. Like, you don't. Man, give me whatever, you know, whatever. Y'all could eat 10 burgers and not gain a pound.
Right.
My age, nah, bro, no.
Yeah.
Like, real you know time, what I'm saying?
Even my age, I can't. Hold on, I can't eat this hot shit no more. Like, I used to put down that hot shit. Wow, man.
So, yeah, you got to be careful, man. So, I think eating healthy and you know, and I need to do better, but trying to eat healthy is important, I think. You got to be conscious of what you're putting in your body.
Okay, so you say you got an event in LA. You said you going out to
So Mars has a show for BMI. BMI is they got the BMI awards out there, and they're bringing her out there to do a small performance. So we got to go out there and do that, and then we'll come back. And then she's got a couple shows here lined up.
Ah, okay, that's dope.
Yeah,
that was a dope event you put out. What was that up in the Nulu? That love letter anniversary.
Yeah,
that was some player shit right there, boy.
Yeah.
You know, the menu and
you know, again, that is an example of like, I just wish, and I know everybody doesn't have the know-how, but even with that event, shout out to my homegirl Ann. She has a company called Andromeda Media, I think, but she came through and helped with a lot of stuff. So in other words, she got me all the sponsors. She got like the liquor brands to come through and support.
Mm-hmm.
She got the restaurant to support. Shout out to Cat. But I was like conscious of doing it on that level. You know what I'm saying? And I get it. I got a lot more experience, but I just wish artists here in the city would think on a bigger level on the business side of things and not just be rappers. Cause you today being a rapper is dead. Like we're not really in a music business. This is a tech business, and artists don't get that. They think that they're in the music business, so they keep leading with the music first. Nah, today you kind of have to be a content creator who makes music. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, so, I agree. I think I'm gonna take it a little farther. I think whatever you're doing, like if you do her, I think you got to be part of a content creator. You know, making food. Like,
if you want to do it, and some people will argue about, you know, it shouldn't be like that, but it's always been like that. Like you've always had to do marketing. Now,
mm-hmm.
whether marketing through the phone or through a magazine or through a newspaper. You know, that could be different, but you still had to market. If that was the case, then you know, Coca, you wouldn't see Coca-Cola commercials.
Right.
You wouldn't see them. You know, you just wouldn't see it if you didn't have to do that. And a lot of artists don't seem to understand that's what you got to do. Knowing how to run your YouTube channel, knowing how to run your socials, how things work. Like, they don't do that. And so, therefore, they drown. I just told an artist the other day, I'm not even going to say who the name, but right. I told him on the phone, like, bro, you're drowning. Like, I'm watching you die in real life.
What do you mean, like, die? Like,
just your music career. Uh-huh. Like, your career is dying, and I'm watching it die because I know how it works. Mm-hmm. And you're oblivious. You know right. what I'm saying? So it's like watching somebody drown, bro. It's like, and you're like, come on, man, I'm trying to help you. And they're like, no, I'm good, bro. But they just keep getting lower and lower. Mm-hmm. And it's like, that's a painful thing to watch, you know? But
it
so
really
to that event, I'm just saying, I had the foresight to be like, yeah, we got to make this look big. I need to find somebody who can help with this. Just, you know, put a team together. And that's what we did. So, and that's why it looked like that.
Yeah, it was a pretty dope event. That was one of the, you know what I mean? That was real player, man. Yeah. Good networking event too. We networked with a couple people. Your guy at Flair, some dude in there. He's coming up with a dispensary or something.
I don't know.
But yeah, man, that was a dope event. How you feel about the awards, man? How did you? Did you like the award?
Yeah, I mean,
Were you there?
Yeah, I was there. I was there. I had to leave, but
yeah, I got bring into
it. You know, shout out to DJ Slick and EB and. Amber, you know, they kind of been holding it down for, well, Slick especially has been doing this thing for like over at least 15 years. Mm-hmm. And it used to be something else before it turned into the Kentucky Urban Entertainment Awards.
Yeah.
But he's been doing it for, you know, out of his own pocket. He's been doing this every year. And really his intentions is, you know, he's just trying to provide something for the music community, entertainment community, to have something to look for, and that's why he does it. So I support it for that reason, just off the rip. But I think it's dope. I think some things need to change with it to make it better. But, you know, that's some stuff that I think we're going to work on for next year.
Mm-hmm. What do you mean? Like, you want to talk about that? Like, what we need to change?
What do you think needs to change? Let me ask you that. You was a nominee.
I don't know. I think people say it's a popularity contest, but ain't that all, you know, when you vote for something, ain't that the popular person's going to, you know. Yeah. So I don't know. I never really been in the mix. This is like my first year being into the mix, so I really can't say what we need to change. I don't know. I wish we'd have won, though, but, you know, but it is what it is. But
yeah, go ahead.
I really can't speak, you know. I don't think I'm qualified enough. Like, you know, to see what I need to change. Maybe like 2 or 3 years down the road, you're asking the question. But
yeah.
I don't know. It was a dope event. People came out fly. And I don't know.
I think, yeah, it's just some things I think we're going to need to change in terms of like categories and, you know, how the voting process works on the back end and, you know, stuff like that. But my biggest thing was just kind of tweaking the categories and make them more definitive, because I think some of the categories are a little too vague. And what happens is you get too many people thinking they belong in the category when they don't.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I know Slick ain't into the business of having to explain everything to everybody. You shouldn't have to.
Right.
So, you know, we're just going to try to make it easier for people to be justified to be nominated for things, stuff like that. So that's one thing I think should change.
Yeah, I definitely agree on that. I think that, you know, it should be more categories. You know, a lot of them are mixing together. So yeah. I think that's one, I guess, complaint. I don't know, but... Yeah, it was a dope event. I can't wait. Is it any more awards? Local awards?
Nah, not that I know of. He's the only one that does one every year consistently.
Oh, okay.
So, but Slick is dope. Shout out to Slick, man. He's been doing it for a long time. Yeah, good dude.
Yeah, come fuck with us and come on the podcast,
yeah,
man.
Yeah, yeah. He need to be on here, man. That's a legend, right? Like, he's a real legend. You know what I'm saying? Slick is a real legend. You know.
Yeah. Have you ever worked with him or collabed with him? Or
yes, my brother, man. I work with all of them. All the Allegiance crew. I'm in the Allegiance crew. I work with all of them, and Slick is a real good dude. I work with EB a lot. Work with Amber a few times. Yeah, they all good people, man. They all in it for the betterment of the culture here locally.
EB was a part of Dope 16, wasn't he? He was man of Dope 16. Yeah. Did you ever work with any artists or any? Have your handprint on that?
Though Dope 16 was started by my man Beezy.
Okay, yeah,
that's my brother, and So I was there from the beginning, and mm-hmm. I didn't really have a hand in it, but I was there always supporting, at all the events and stuff. And that was an amazing run that him and EB put together. I mean, that's some Louisville history.
It was, man. Still.
I wanted to do a documentary about that culture because to me, the Dope 16 era was the biggest music movement in Kentucky history, musically.
It was.
Yeah, because we've had several music scenes in here, like, a couple of times. This is like how everybody's doing music today is like the third time that this happened in Louisville. And then it fizzles out.
Yeah.
But the Dope 16 era was an era that just like coasted and it became nationwide. It became huge.
It did, man.
So, you know.
I think Crack Doja had a music, you know. Yeah. It was an era too.
Yeah. Crack Doja was an era. So Street Credit was an era.
Street Credit, who was that? That was
my man Tony. So Tony started out by doing, he would just go interview people.
Yeah.
And he wanted to make a DVD of him interviewing rappers. But then what he would do is he would like, I'll shoot you a video. And so everybody he would interview, he would then shoot them a music video.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And that became super popular. Like, yeah. And Street Credit blew up. That's where you got like your Daddy-O's and, you know, all of these guys and, you know, Her Season and all them. They all blew up. You know, Her Season was always Her Season, but a lot of artists blew up during that era too. And then you got Crack Doja, of course, who was, you know, making beats and shooting videos. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I don't know if he was making beats, but he was shooting videos.
I thought that was like 10 people. Like, he did the graphics, yeah. Shot the video, did the
beats. That very true. Yeah.
Yeah. When I found out it was one brother, I was mind blown. I thought Crack Doja was like a, you know, production company, you know.
Yeah. Crack Doza was the man. He was. And he kind of set the stage for other people to be multifaceted and be hands-on and different, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And different things. So it can be done. So
before we get out of here, man, I want you to give a line or a gem to a younger girl, a younger person just trying to figure out what he want to do in life and, you know.
I think just anybody up and coming, and whatever, I think, like, choose what you want to do carefully. Live life, but choose what you want to do carefully. Be mindful of what it is you're about to devote your time to, because we waste a lot of time by starting stuff we don't finish.
Mm-hmm.
When we could have dedicated a lot of that time to finding something we love and sticking with it. Another thing is to have discipline overall. Discipline is what matters most, not your motivation. Motivation is kind of to me, is not real. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
I ain't gonna say it's not real, but it's not. That ain't what I use to get me up out the bed every day to do something.
Right.
So I think discipline is key. And just educate yourself on whatever it is you want to do. Don't just hop in it blind. Like, look into it and figure out if this is what you want to do for the next how many years, or if this is a career path you want to choose. So I didn't go to college till I was 30.
Oh, really?
You know what I'm saying? Yeah. And it was like, I'm glad I didn't. I'd be glad I did it that way, because if I would have went out of high school, I'd have bombed so hard because I wouldn't. My attention span wasn't there.
Right.
But when I was 30, I was like, I really like computers.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, you know, I should do IT.
And right.
I showed up to class every day. I did my homework. I studied for my tests. You feel me?
Is that what you had to graduate?
I graduated, and then I got had a degree in IT.
Uh-huh.
And I went. The first job I had was at KFC headquarters, which is an amazing job.
Really?
Yeah, I was a software engineer there.
Uh-huh.
I went to Humana as a software engineer, and then I became a supervisor at Humana. So
how long was that process? Like the
2 years.
2 years?
Yeah, 2 years.
So I'm thinking about going back to school, man. I'm thinking about going to IT, you know.
IT is dope because it's like one of those things you carry with you forever.
Right.
Like, it doesn't go away. You know what I'm saying? So, like, and it's a trade, right? Because it's like, if I wanted to fix computers, I can start my own business doing that. But I think IT degree is very good. We live in a technology age. There's a lot of jobs you can get. There's a lot of things you can learn online about IT if you don't have those skill sets yet. It's a good field to be in, I think.
That's dope, man.
Yeah.
Because I didn't go to college. I went to college for like one semester, but a lot of my peers went to college and they didn't last a year. You know what I mean? They $20,000-$30,000 in debt.
Yeah.
I don't know. It was a real expensive party.
Hey, look, before we got here, right, I'm going to do this for you. So for any artist that watched this, right, because I'm getting irritated of talking to artists all the time. Like, I sound disgruntled, man. I'm not really disgruntled, but
it's all right. But I get tired of dealing with stupid shit too.
But look, man, so any artist that's watching this podcast, or if you watching this podcast and you got a friend who raps or does music, you need to tell them to watch this episode, because I'm gonna give you some game real quick. Some game real fast. First thing is this: for anybody who does not understand this, I'm telling you what it is. YouTube is the biggest platform for discovery. YouTube has the most people on the platform by far. The second one is TikTok. Third one is Snapchat. The last one is Instagram. So if you're an artist that only lives on Instagram, you're dead in the water. You're not going to make it.
Really?
Yeah. Uh-huh. These are facts. This is not me saying it.
Okay.
This is actual data, right? Uh-huh. As of recent of December 2023. So YouTube is the biggest platform. So think about it like this. How many, we can all comfortably say that we know an artist on Instagram that posted something in the last 30 days about their music, right? We can say that.
Right.
But then ask yourself this. How many times have you seen them on YouTube promoting themselves on YouTube? You don't.
Wow. Okay.
Because they don't. So that's lesson one. Understand what platforms you need to exist on. You need to exist on them all, really. Mm. And there's tools to help you do that if it's overwhelming. There's tools that you can post one time and it posts to everything for you. You know, but you might have to pay a little fee.
Yeah.
But, you know, nothing crazy, you know what I'm saying? But anyway, understand what platforms you need to exist on, right?
Yeah. You think we should have a Snapchat?
Why not? Why does it hurt? Does it hurt to not have one?
No, I don't.
Yeah, so have one. Like, okay, have one.
I'm going to get a Snapchat.
You know what I'm saying? Find out how podcasts work on Snapchat. You feel me?
Uh-huh.
Like, see how people, how clips get posted, what's the best practices for. Because what's done for a podcast might be different for artists,
right,
on,
okay,
Snapchat. You know what I mean? But that's easy information to find out, right? Mm-hmm. So, and if you got ChatGPT, you could cheat all day long.
That's a resourceful app right there, buddy.
So that'll be lesson two. If you don't know shit about the music business, get Snapchat, get ChatGPT. And ask it questions. Like, if you want to know answers, ask it questions. It's pretty accurate.
Mm-hmm.
It will give you a lot of information. The other thing is, we live in an algorithmic world. Some people don't like to hear that word and they think it's corny or whatever, but you've been living in an algorithmic world. You yourself are an algorithm. Every decision you've made to get you to where you are at this very moment in life, it's been all based off a bunch of yes and no's.
Mm-hmm.
That's your whole life is yes and no's. You did something or you didn't. And that's what got you here. So doing your music and living on these platforms is all algorithm based, meaning you got to figure out how the algorithms work on these platforms and you got to cater to those algorithms. You throwing your music out every day, telling and showing me and DMing me and telling me to check your music out does not work. Please, for the love of God, please stop sending me shit, man, because I have no capacity to listen to it. I don't have the time. I'm not saying I wouldn't,
right?
But I really don't have the time. So, you know, y'all gotta, if you're doing the work, I'm gonna see you. You know what I'm saying? I'm not saying it's nothing wrong with sharing stuff, but some people would bombard me in the DMs like, listen to this song, listen to this song, listen to this song. And that's, you kind of spamming at that point. You know what I'm saying? And people,
mm-hmm,
you drive more people away than you do bringing them to what you're doing.
My co-host told me that too. I stopped that, like, mass DMing people. Have you seen this? So I stopped that. So,
I mean, the platforms themselves know you spamming. So it's like they'll hurt you.
Mm-hmm.
Like Instagram will shadow ban you. All of a sudden you ain't getting views because they know that you done went in 300 inboxes and check my and sent a link.
That's,
you know what I'm saying?
Right there. Okay.
So you gotta be careful of that. Another thing is when you're making content is king, right? So when you're making content, you don't always have to sell. The biggest thing that people want from content from an up and coming artist is access. They wanna know you. They wanna feel like they're following your journey. Like, take people on a journey. Like, you know, take people on a journey and be mindful of the content that you're making. Like, sit down and make a plan, bro. I don't understand. Like, y'all plan for every, you plan to go to the club.
Right.
But you can't plan to release your music? Are you crazy? Like, that makes no sense to me. Like, uh-huh, you will plan to go to the club. Hey, bro, so look, what you want to go to so-and-so tonight? Yeah, bro, what time we going to go? All right, we going to go this time. I'm going to holler at so-and-so. I need to go get these shoes real quick, so I'll be back. You do all that to go kick it, but you can't do none of that to get your music out. which is retarded.
That's free game, man.
Right. So please, plan. Sit down, create a plan. If you don't know what to do, you can always hit me up. I do have a service I charge for now because I just can't talk to everybody for free all day long.
Right.
But it ain't nothing crazy. But I'll give you some game and I'll help you out. You know, and then also probably one of the last things I say is when you on these platforms, or no, I say this, get out and move around, like network with people. Like you can't be a person that's in the house 24/7, expect to blow up. And, you know, you got to get out and meet people and you got to introduce yourself. You got to be personable. You got to talk to people and you got to have a, you know, also having a budget for yourself so you can run ads and, you know, things like that. You have to have a budget to run ads. Unless you, there's only one artist that I know that doesn't do that and is blowing up, and that's Norman Sand. But he's an anomaly. His content game is so high level that that's what works for him, right? But anybody else, man, have you a budget to run ads? When you're putting songs out, you got to promote them. You got to do the marketing. And it's all about building a fan base. Without a fan base, it doesn't matter. You can have the greatest song in the world. Spotify doesn't give a shit that your song was dope. It doesn't care. The only thing it cares about is people coming to your page. And if they are, then they're going to show you love. If they ain't, they're not going to show you love. You know what I'm saying? It's no different with Instagram or nothing, or none of these pages. So build an audience. That's the name of the game. We in the customer acquisition game. That's what you're doing as an artist. So please stop DMing me and build a strategy. Put some money up. Because everybody who say they ain't got the budget for it is lying.
You heard it, man.
Because you got the budget for every other stupid bullshit.
Budget for shoes, drugs, you know what I'm saying? Gas.
You got
you know
a budget
what I mean?
For it, and learn how these platforms work. So that's it, man.
That's it, man. That's and we gonna end it just like that. Follow us on everything. Instagram. We about to have a Snapchat. It's coming soon. TikTok, Twitter,
Big
Facebook,
lazy.
Apple Music, Spotify. Where can they find you at, man?
You find me on Instagram at John Woo Got Beats. I ain't an artist, so before somebody be like, you ain't got a YouTube, I'm not an artist, man. So find me on Instagram at John Woo, JONWOO Got Beats, and, you know, just hit me there. Just don't DM me your music, please.
No DMs.
DM me the plan. DM me the plan before you DM me the music. I'd rather read that.
Okay.
Yeah. So.
And we go into just like that.
Just like that.
We out.
This podcast was produced by B. Haywood for Confirmed Podcast Network. Hey, B. Haywood, Confirmed Podcast Network. Thank you for all the continued support. Continue to check out We Them Girls Podcast, as well as Big and Lazy Podcast on the Confirmed Podcast Network. We love you. Thank you for the support. And keep on listening. We got more content coming for y'all. Thank you.
Hey, this is B. Haywood, executive producer of Confirmed Multimedia. And if you want extra content, you can go to buymeacoffee.com/confirmed and get early access to all of our content.
You're listening to Confirmed.